You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 11 September, we've got U.S. inflation data, 2:30 p.m. expected, 2.9% up from 2.7%. We've also got European Central Bank rate decision. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, Oracle, massive surge, 30%+ overnight. What happened there? We're chatting with Lawrence Kutsia from Marriott. Relative performance should not be an all-star for investors. And then Sean Ashton from Old Mutual Wealth, how the large tech stocks are driving return and how they manage the concentration. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. SunBet now more profitable than cash cow Grand West as rival Soho Sun admits it has all but missed out on online. Business Day, Nursa cracks whip after catastrophic $54 billion tariff blunder. Energy regulator suspends senior staff member and orders independent audit. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.3%, NASDAQ up a couple of points, 0.03%. Easter's mostly red, Sydney down a tenth of a percent, Tokyo is the exception, up 1%, Hong Kong down a third of a percent, 10 cent off a full percentage point. Commodities mostly green, gold futures is the red, $3,670, Brent $67.44, platinum $1,396, palladium $1,209. The rand is 17.84, Bitcoin 114,100, and top 40 opening call 100 points to the red, 0.1% down.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Viv Govender. You find him, of course, at Rand Swiss. Viv Govender, Oracle. I suppose my question is, what's happening? Stock up 40%. And to be clear, this wasn't a small cap. It was a, 600 odd billion rand dollar stock and absolutely flying. The numbers, results weren't bad, but not that good, I would have thought.
Yeah, look, I think Larry Ellison has basically had the best day in history of any person who doesn't have created. I was seeing it at 30% up. He was making up something like about $50 billion.
Yeah.
And now it's actually 40% up. So what's been happening here is that, of course, you know, the market's really bullish on AI. Mm-hmm. And Oracle has come out with basically saying that they're very much an AI company, an AI cloud company. And the cloud that they're kind of providing is more towards, as opposed to something like, say, ChatGPT, that's like, you know, focusing on retail and so on. This is more towards, you know, companies that need to have a more secure base, a more like reliable kind of, you know, system for their workflows and something that's actually, you know, going to be able to provide them the power they need when they do need it. So yeah, it is a very good result, but I think also it just kind of feeds into the idea of AI and Oracle basically positioning itself as the AI or one of the AI, you know, cloud providers out there.
And it comes from a weird direction. I mean, you know, AI, we think NVIDIA, we think a lot else. I think we kind of misunderstand sometimes that a lot of this AI is not going to be ChatGPT, but it is going to be cloud compute. And that was one of the key things. I mean, they're talking, what did the CEO say? The next few months, expect to sign up several additional multi-billion dollar customers. This is perhaps part of the untapped part.
Oh yeah, most certainly. I mean, thinking that because AI is going to be about the chips entirely is like thinking that, you know, internet was about the routers and the fiber optics. You know what I mean? Obviously, we are going to move on that value chain. And in a few years' time, we'll be obviously thinking about the Googles and the, you know, the Ubers and the Airbnbs of the AI sector. But right now, we are focusing a lot on the chips. And if you look at, for instance, like I say, NVIDIA, most valuable company in the world,
Yeah. There
is a market share that comes from the fact that they make the chips that, you know, obviously, because OpenAI and other companies use to produce, you know, the value. But if you think about it, yeah, I mean, there's no way that could be the largest part of the value, because you're not going to buy something that's going to be like 90% going towards the guy that you're buying it from. You've got to make a huge profit beyond that. You've got to have a service that's going to make a huge amount of money beyond that. And that's where people like Oracle come in and CoreWeave and so on, where they are providing the next step, where they take these chips that are provided by NVIDIA and actually do something with them. And they're not doing the things that OpenAI is doing, which is basically creating the program, but they're actually happening to run the software. Or run the program behind the scenes. And again, if you think about it, the idea that creating the or training the software is going to be the major cost here, the major thing, doesn't make sense. Obviously, if you make something, you're going to have a lot more use from it to basically make it the initial training valuable. And this is where the inferred stuff comes into play, that where Oracle is playing in.
That's a great point. I mean, there's nothing wrong with NVIDIA. They make great chips, great margins, most valuable company in the world, trading off just off all-time highs. But at the end of the day, and I don't want to say one day we're going to have all the chips, but they've got that sort of rat race to continually come out with the new chip, the new innovation, the new areas. Jensen Huang talks a lot about autonomous driving. The cloud, the data centers are almost simpler. Now, they're going to have to constantly be reinventing themselves, but perhaps at a slightly slower speed.
Yes, look, I mean, also, they are simpler, but obviously, what they say is, because quantity has a quality all of its own, that mm-hmm. Mr. Napoleon said that, the size of these things are gigantic, and you may think, okay, just anyone can just hook these things up together and you can make it work. But when you talk about the size of these things, there's very few people out there that know how to, like, you know, handle like the huge fluctuations in, like, you know, voltages among the different, like, you know, chips, etc., which could, you know, if you get that slightly wrong, can destroy, you know, huge amounts of capital. There is a certain, like, art that comes into play when you do talk about, like, the scale of these companies and the scale of the data centers that they are building. And so, yeah, there is an advantage that they will actually have out there as well. And when it does come to the inference stuff, yeah, it may be a bit more sticky, as you said. If all, you know, Oracle's progress stopped today, NVIDIA would probably fall in value, OpenAI would probably fall in value because they're not creating things that's their main value creation. But the inference guys would still be great making money because you still have to run the things that already basically not progressing any further, but have value and can still be, you know, run for some profitability. And so inference probably is a little stickier. It doesn't require as much innovation, etc., as you said, as the chip or the trading guys.
That's actually a great point. And some Meta, I think Alphabet, Amazon, all looking to make their own chips as well, which of course puts some threat. We can debate how much threat, but some to NVIDIA. But for now, it's Oracle. It's Larry Ellison enjoying his, I don't know, 50, 70 extra billion he made in a day. Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Is this the world god, man? I mean, Oracle was not a small stock. It closed the day at a $922 billion business. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Lawrence Kutsia, investment specialist at Marriott. Lawrence, appreciate the time. A recent note you put out, there was a bunch in it I liked, one that really jumped out at you. And you say that, and I quote, relative performance is not a North Star. I think a lot of folks are like, hang on a second, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to beat that index on a day by day or benchmark, whatever it might be. You're saying, hang on a sec, this is not always necessarily the best approach.
Yeah, Simon, thank you so much for the time and just really honored to be on your show and share our views. Yeah, it's just, you know, I think the note and what we're trying to communicate in the market is it just seems like there are things that are moving markets that mm-hmm. aren't normally traditional. So, you know, the last few years, you just think about COVID, you think about the wars, you think about the movements in markets being so volatile, that we think there's a bit of randomness. And, you know, I think, you know, trying to outperform, trying to kind of speculate on where markets are going to go has become increasingly more difficult. In actual fact, we don't think you can do it.
It's become a lucky packet almost in a sense. I mean, to your point.
It really has.
So then it's a case of another great line was, you say, stop trying to sort of say what's going to happen next. To your point, markets have become even more sort of random and wild than ever. And it's kind of preparing portfolios for, I don't know, whatever comes next regardless, rather than trying to make that prediction.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of examples. Hmm. You know, like Novo Nordisk.
Yeah.
You know, for over the last 5 years, where the first 4 years were up like almost 500% because they had found a drug that could help with, you know, weight. And, you know, it's down 70% this last year. And, you know, it's difficult to try and figure out where to go from here. You know, Gold Fields, in a South African example, went nowhere for 4 years and is up 150%.
Yeah.
And then you look at Tesla, you know, it's over the last 5 years, it's up 150%. But there were six occasions in the last 5 years where they were down more than 30%. So, you know, for us, it's just so difficult to try and think about, you know, where the next returns are going to come from. So what we are trying to share with, you know, investors is, what we feel we can add value is to say, If you think about the business truth about prices over time grows in line with earnings growth.
Yeah.
So focus on the earnings resilience and growth. That's the only thing you can really control in this environment. And that's what we are, you know, thinking is what asset managers can do. Don't be fooled by randomness. You know, you might think you're really skilled because you're in, you know, maybe six stocks that are doing well, but next year they could be the worst performing stocks. And then your whole process is gone out the window. We think a more consistent way and something that can really add value, especially in markets where we are now, is to look for earnings resilience, look for earnings growth, because that's where you can really add value to investors.
I agree 100%. I take your point. I mean, they are, make no mistake, some high flyers. To your point, those high flyers often come back to earth, and sometimes a whole lot quicker than they went up. And it goes back to, you know, it's good old fashioned. It's sort of companies that are on essential services, goods and the like. You mentioned strong earnings, strong cash flows. Heck, dividends are a really good indicator as well.
Yeah, you know, Marriott is known as the income specialist.
Yeah.
You know, when we're looking at equities, we look to invest in companies that have great track records. You know, for us, that means something. It means that they've got a proven business model that's been able to go through very difficult times. But I think on top of that, it's no good to just have a company that has a good track record. They have to be relevant. They have to have earnings outlook that's going to be good going forward. If I look at our current portfolio, you know, offshore equities, you know, we can talk about some of the names, ASML, Equinix, Coca-Cola, L'Oreal, Microsoft. Those type of companies in a portfolio is yielding about 2.6%, and the earnings growth over the next 2 years is about 11%, which to us is everything.
Yeah.
You know, we can hold on to that.
Take your point. And it's 11%. And to be clear, this is in dollars and not in ZAR. And you mentioned ASML there, because a lot of folks would have been thinking, yeah, you're missing out on the AI. ASML gets you that AI. It just comes at it from a different angle.
Yeah, Simon, I think that's the key. For us, it's about who's going to be the winner on, you know, selling the chips.
Mm-hmm.
We would rather invest in a company that makes the machine that makes the chips. And we know they're going to do well. There's going to be more demand for that. And we certainly want to go add it through that lens for sure.
The last point then, I mean, this comes back to good old-fashioned, rather than the momentum, which can turn in a dime, it's going back to old-fashioned fundamentals, understanding the business, understanding the growth prospects, and picking those that have good business and good growth.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're all about. You know, the difficulty is to keep going down that road, but we truly believe that that is where we can add value. In a world where there's people chasing the next best thing and markets can go up, you know, 50, 60, 70%, and then fall very quickly. I think you get lost in that very, very quickly. And you know, we want to try and, you know, give that, if you want that certainty, you want that resilience, you know, come to Marriott. That's what we are offering to investors.
Yeah. And it should give you, as you say, it's not about that short-term performance. Ultimately, it's about the longer term. We'll leave it there. Lawrence Kutsia, investment specialist, Marriott, appreciate the time.
Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Sean Ashton, Head of Investments at Private Clients by Old Mutual Wealth. Sean, appreciate the time. There's a lot of talk around at the moment, the concentration of stocks in the S&P 500. You've crunched some data on the S&P looking at returns generated by the large stocks. And tell me what you found, because generally, this is not a new phenomenon. It might be bigger than usual, but returns usually come from a fairly concentrated a number of large caps.
It's true. And I think that, you know, there's this adage that many will be perhaps aware of, that a few key stocks drive most of the returns in one's portfolio over time. But increasingly so, that's actually true for entire large so-called diversified indices. And we did an exercise looking at the S&P 500 and the constitution of returns going back to 2010 for each year. So we kind of broke it up into each year. And what we did is we said, okay, let's exclude the years where you've had negative returns, because then the maths doesn't work so well. But
sure,
you know, for years where you've had positive returns and kind of north of 5% a year, so like a normal, typical year, what proportion of returns have come from the top 5, 10, mm-hmm. 20 contributors. So not necessarily the largest companies, gotcha. But the biggest contributors to return. And it's interesting, over that time frame, on average, about your top five contributors to returns have tended to have generated on average about 29% of the return wow. of the index in any given year, so quite sizable. So that talks the kind of concentration of returns, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. But when we look at the last 2 years, in 2024, that metric was 46%. And year to date, it's 65%. So just think about that for a moment. Two-thirds of the return of the S&P 500 has come from five shares, right?
Yeah.
It's actually it's a crazy statistic, and it's got enormous implications for people who are trying to manage, you know, run actively managed portfolios, and for even if you just own a passive index, just understand that it's like a handful of stocks that have given you your returns.
Yeah, if you've got a passive, the short version is you're not as diversified as your returns are not as diversified as you think. For an active manager, which is the space where you sit, I mean, what is then the response? Because, I mean, you've got to be involved to some degree in those stocks, I imagine.
Absolutely. So look, and it also stands to reason that the biggest contributors that we've seen in the last year or two mm-hmm. have been the usual suspects. So your biggest names as well have tended to have delivered the highest return contribution to the index, which is a function of A, their starting size, and yeah. B, the percentage gains that they've delivered. So the usual suspects being Nvidia, Microsoft, Meta, Amazon, in varying proportions, though, those have been kind of main features in the last 2 years. There have been some new names this year, though. So a company like Broadcom at the listed number four, Palantir Technologies, many wouldn't have even heard of that yeah. company up until fairly recently. And that's up 100% year to date, right? and has delivered a fairly sizable return to the index. I also think that it's important to note that we have seen some signs of a rotation and a broadening out of markets in the last literally month. Mm-hmm. So all the data I'm talking about in the note that we wrote was kind of through the middle of August, but subsequent to that time frame, and especially so since the Jackson Hole Federal Reserve Conference, where we've seen some signs of a pivot towards easier monetary policy going forward. Mm-hmm. The parts of the market that stand to potentially benefit disproportionately from lower interest rates, you've begun to see some more participation there. So, you know, the interest rate sensitive sectors of the market, things like the Russell 2000, have started to break out again on a relative yeah. basis. And in the financial space, you know, your banks have done well. And any business that's exposed to real estate or the real estate market in some shape or form could potentially benefit from lower rates. We've seen some early signs of returns emerging there.
But then this is where the active manager, such as yourself, really needs to earn their stripes. Because if 65% is from that, and we're talking this year and the numbers yeah. change, but 65% is the return. The other 35, which you've got to go and find, is the challenge. And as I say, that's really where you and your colleagues earn the stripes.
For sure. Look, and it's not to say that one should not have exposure to the big companies.
Sure.
You've got to think thoughtfully about that. So obviously, if you've missed one or two key names this year as an active manager, or even in the last couple of years, your returns have probably looked very different to the index. Mm-hmm. So one has to be pragmatic about saying we're not going to not own the biggest companies just because we want to look different. You've got to look at each one and say, yeah, does the investment case stack up for us right now in this company? Obviously, like as a house, we don't own Tesla at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a very large company. It attracts varying market opinions, but obviously it doesn't stack up on a quality basis on the basis of many metrics we look at. Yeah, but businesses like Alphabet, great valuation fairly recently, kind of underappreciated by the market, and you've seen those returns come through. We've been overweight a name like that, so that's worked quite well for us.
I take your point. I mean, Alphabet, case in point, as you say, I mean, at one point was just, I think it was in a PE of 18 and the S&P was 23.
High teens, absolutely. And then there was this big regulatory overhang that has subsequently been resolved as a result of them not having to dispose of their of their Chrome business. So you've seen that rating move a lot closer to a peer like Meta, for example.
Yeah, so there's always going to be the opportunity. It's just it's finding it in that other 35 is often the challenge. Sean Ashton, Head of Investments, Private Clients, Old Mutual Wealth. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Ntobeli Bopela yesterday. She, of course, FNB Wealth and Investments. We're talking the Anglo-American tech merger and their move to Canada as it becomes a majority copper miner. We asked if this was a good deal for shareholders. Almost two-thirds of you said, yeah, absolutely, great deal. About 20% said, no, too much copper. The rest said they worry about top-of-cycle risks. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Discovery Bank.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.